Go ahead.
This is the Annabelle Planning Commission meeting. Today is what day is today? Today is October 27th. And according to the agenda, the first order of business is roll call. I'm Kent Polson. I'm here. We have Kelvin Johns and Wade Ingram and our illustrious fellow member that used to run everything, John, right here. And we're excusing Devin Squires and Lenny Hartle. We're not able to attend this evening. The next item is approval of minutes. Has everybody had a chance to look through?
I'll make a motion we approve them.
Kelvin has made a motion that we approve the minutes.
Second.
It's been seconded by John. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to the next item of business is consideration and discussion of proposed amendments to the land use ordinance. Now, this is specifically what we've been working on for months as far as updating the land use ordinance. And Tyler's here with Six County to help us through that. Do you want to kind of give us a synopsis of where we're at?
Yeah, you bet. Pull that up real quick. And I'm happy to plug into the TV if that would be.
You guys want him to plug in and walk through stuff? Or?
I don't know. I still haven't spent my due diligence going through it totally yet. I mean, I've made a couple of comments, but.
Well, I can give you kind of the rundown of what I've done and a couple questions that I've got, and then if we need to like kick it down the road, that's totally fine. There was a lot of, it looked like Devin had made a lot of comments and requested changes on definitions, adding definitions, removing, modifying, and so I implemented all of those. There was one question that I wanted to chat about tonight, specifically about accessory dwelling units and internal accessory dwelling units. Let me just get to that section.
It's our favorite topic.
Yeah. So his comment was that he sees conflicting things. Are ADUs permitted use if they are attached? It's clear that if they are detached, they can be conditional. Attached would be like building a breezeway and then an ADU adjacent to the house or building onto the home off one wall. And then he said, my reading of the code indicates that an attached ADU would qualify as permitted only as it is as an existing part of the structure. You cannot add on and then apply for a permitted use. Seems a bit gray to me, though. And I understand what he's saying. It doesn't clearly define adding on or attached as whether a breezeway qualifies as attached. So I don't know if you guys want me to clarify that or if you feel like that's somewhat of a non-issue. I just didn't make those changes because I wanted to kind of have a discussion tonight about that.
So we got the internal accessory dwelling unit and then the accessory dwelling unit, which the accessory dwelling unit we've had defined for quite some time.
Yep.
Now we've taken on the chore of defining an internal.
Yes.
I guess when I looked at it, and I read Devin's comment. Mm-hmm. The accessory dwelling unit takes a conditional use permit.
Correct.
But we don't know if an internal one does.
It does not.
So the way it's written is, how do they get approved for it?
Right now there's not hardly anything that a town can do for internal accessory dwelling units. The only thing that you can require is that there's like a sewer, like just to make sure that their septic system isn't undersized or failing. You can make sure that the owner is the current occupant of the house, or like, I guess.
So those subheadings under that, like what you're just going through.
Yeah.
But I think what I hear in the question was, What if somebody comes to us and says, I'm adding on, I'm doing a breezeway and adding this over here, and then I want to make it an accessory dwelling unit. Yeah, and it becomes internal because of the breezeway that's connected.
Or
if it's attached to the house, just on an exterior wall where it's attached. I think that's what I hear his question is more about.
Yeah.
How do we handle that if somebody comes and says, well, it's not going to be an external, it's going to be attached. Now, it would just have to fall underneath. So when it's external, it has to the lot has to be over a certain size. But when it's internal, is there a size restriction still?
Because it could just be their base, like a basement apartment, or if they converted their garage into an apartment. There's a lot less that state code allows cities and towns to do with internal. The accessory dwelling units, that's where you can set minimum and maximum square footage. You can
make for the external, the minimum and maximum. But if it's an internal, there's no setting of minimum and maximum size. So somebody could turn a garage into a separate unit. And
technically, yeah.
And there's nothing that anybody can do about it.
You can require, like how it's written right now, it just says each internal accessory dwelling unit shall have cooking, bathing, living, and sleeping areas that are separate from and in addition to those of the primary dwelling unit. So, I mean, it has to be adequate enough to where they can have a kitchen, a bathroom, and a sleeping area. They can't share that with, so like, for instance, if it is a basement apartment, they can't use the upstairs kitchen. They have to have completely separate facilities for that internal accessory dwelling unit.
And that's how it is right now?
That's how, well, not like your current ordinance, but like how we have this updated draft, that's how it's written right now.
But again, that falls because we can't control that anyway.
Not so much, no. The only thing, like I said, the only thing you really can do is make sure that it's the primary owner that lives there.
Mm-hmm.
You can make sure, you can require them to have a septic inspection to ensure that it's not a failing or undersized septic system. Typically, that's not a problem because if they build out the septic for the footprint of the home, even if they're adding a basement apartment, they've already accounted for that in the septic size. And then just you're able to limit it to one internal accessory dwelling unit per single family.
And it has to have its own outside entrance.
Correct.
The entrance can't share.
Yep. Off-street parking and a separate entrance.
And the off-street parking area, does it have the same requirements?
Paved and stuff.
Yeah, as the separate unit does.
Not that I read.
It says one off-street parking space per IADU shall be required in addition to any off-street parking provided for the primary dwelling. So it's just asking for one additional space. For an internal accessory dwelling unit.
So do we need to write something in there that doesn't allow them to build a breezeway in a whole separate building and call it an internal?
But can we?
I think you need to.
Probably. But I think that was the question I think that Devin was getting at. I guess the question is, based on the way the law is written, if somebody wants to do an addition and we would approve that addition if it wasn't an accessory dwelling unit. Can we actually say it's an addition to the house, but you can't do an accessory dwelling?
We could, because there was like two different things you brought up there. I think if someone added on, like busted out the back wall of their house and added on, I think that's an internal ADU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if they're connecting it somehow, so we could say if it's contiguous, and I just had the other word in my brain, what was it? I had it right there.
Sorry.
It went away. Somehow to say that it's built on and part of the primary dwelling and not separate.
An ADU has to meet all of your setback requirements. So that means it has to be X number of feet off the main building, X number of feet off of the lot lines. I feel like that'd be a heck of a breezeway because how far off like a shed or like.
Well, that's the thing is they're gonna get around all that other stuff, aren't they? If they just connect it with a little hallway,
because it would already be, it'd already be done and met all the setbacks.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking the way you're thinking.
So that, I see, okay. So you're just having a breezeway.
I'm just going to have the breezeway, and that adds...
Somehow say contiguous with a common wall. Sorry, it came back to my mind. I didn't speak it.
I think it's perfect.
But, yeah, I think what we're saying is if they just did a little hallway, then they're getting away from all that size requirements and stuff from the one we already have defined.
Yeah.
They're just saying, well, no, it's internal. But if we did something to say it has to be physically part of that primary dwelling.
Shared wall or else.
Shared wall and contiguous with the rest.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't conflict with any of the rules around that the state has already put in place.
ADUs are a lot more flexible. It's the IADU, so I think we can definitely define that and just say it can't be a breezeway or something to negate that. It
needs to be contiguous and attached.
Yeah, got to have at least one shared wall, like you're either building out off of your garage or your kitchen, or you're building a completely separate structure as an ADU, nothing hybrid or in between.
Yeah. That's the goal, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I made a comment, so I'll work on language there. I feel like a lot of the stuff we've gotten dialed down pretty good. Another comment that Devin made, it's on flag lots, specifically on the each lot shall access a street by means of its own right of way or access strip. Successive stacking of lots on the same right of way is not permitted. And so he said, do we want to allow up to two flag lots may share a single access strip / easement when the drivable width, structural section, hydrant spacing, so on and so forth meets town standards. And I didn't know what you guys would want to do on that, if you wanted to allow someone to share a flag lot or if you want to just leave it how it's written where it's one dwelling per flag lot.
If we have a flag lot right now for one owner and they have that driveway, the flagpole, they have to own that, right?
Yeah.
So if two people are coming off of that, who owns that driveway?
I don't know. Because right now we do require them to own the actual flag area with the drive through. It's not just an easement.
I didn't think this would ever come up or be a problem, but just where he addressed it, I didn't really want to answer it without getting some input from you as a planning commission.
Well, I just see that situation where
it creates a public street because there's multiple.
Well, okay, so we have a street down here, right, that feeds down to the Duns.
Yeah.
But that's not a town road.
Nope.
And the Seavies also use that as access into their yard, but they really, their access is from the other side, but they're using that as their access. So the Duns don't own that property either.
No.
That they use that
neither
road.
Neither one of them, is it? Or one of them?
Neither the Duns nor the Seavies own that. It's actually owned by the Cornells, I think.
Yeah.
Who own that?
Powells also use it, and so do the farmers.
Farmers meaning
the people accessing
the fields.
Yeah. But it actually belongs. It's got a street sign on it, but it's not really a street, as far as the town's concerned. We don't plow it. We don't maintain it. We don't do anything.
So this would prevent that from happening again if we say one on a flat lot.
Yeah, and quite frankly, the Duns would have to own that property all the way up to the street.
Yes. Yeah, what I
in order to have that is their access.
What's going to happen is Cornells own it.
Yeah.
And
what happens when somebody moves in and the Cornells just hate them and they're like, you're not using my road anymore.
Yeah. They lose access.
Yeah.
There is access out the other side, though, to the east.
Is there, you go out
through Dunn's property, yeah.
Through
so that's through someone else's property.
Yeah. But that's just for him, not the Seavies.
Yeah.
Seavies would have to build a new access from the other side of their property to come in.
From 5th East.
Yeah, recently.
Which is where all the utilities come from.
That's their frontage, actually.
That is their frontage.
I don't know. I don't know. I can't think of a situation where we would want to allow two.
Mm-hmm. Just leave it as is.
Leave it as is, yep.
Okay.
And you got rays, and there's no way they could have two. And then you got wells, so they could potentially end up with two there. But at that point, I say we need to extend
the road down
the street.
Who owns the access into the wells?
The wells.
Do they own that? Okay. So it's a flag?
Yeah.
Oh, Perry Ray is the other one you're talking about?
Yeah.
MOU?
Okay. Yeah. That's
one that,
but they own
the turkey coop.
Yeah.
Right?
And they own the back driveway.
Yeah. The converted coops.
Yeah.
Yeah. We actually walked through that.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of work.
Been inside.
We walked through it before he bought it.
Oh.
And there was a lot of work to do.
He'd done a lot of work.
And
nice,
but he still had the whole other south side building that he could do whatever he wanted with it. So I'm sure he's done. Yeah, it had potential.
We looked at the house when we moved here.
Yeah.
It was for sale when we bought our home.
It had potential, but
we
didn't
called it the H house.
Because
if you look at it over you, it looks like an H.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway. Yeah. Moving on.
I'll make the note to leave that as one. One other comment that Devin made. Under Section 14, building permit required, code requirements, enforcement, and penalties, it cites the penalty of violation of provisions of this ordinance shall be guilty of a misdemeanor and punishable by law.
That's what it has said in the past, yes.
And he just said, do we need a note on what class of misdemeanor and what fine it may bear? I don't know if you need to get that fine or if that's something we need to talk to the like Sevier County Courthouse about or how that works. I have not gotten into the legal side.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's legal advice there.
I don't think we better.
I wouldn't have any idea.
I think that we probably need to run that whole thing past Eric, if anything.
Eric is a code enforcer, Trevor.
Yeah.
Right now we get a complaint, we turn it over to him, and he takes it to wherever it needs to go.
He might have some language from other places we can plug in there.
I could look at Sevier County's code enforcement that he uses. I tend to shy away from a legal punishment on code enforcement, just because it creates a headache for
It's in there today, so the question is, do we really want to do it?
Yeah, maybe it needs to say something totally different.
I lean towards more of a fine-based, and then leading up to an abatement, and I think that's how Trevor handles it. There's so many notices, so many fines, and then it gets to a point where they actually abate the property and then put a lien on the property until they pay for that abatement service, whatever it may be, whether it's weeds, tires.
And just do it through a lien?
Correct. I don't know. The only ones that I'm aware of that Trevor has sent to like Casey Jukes and the court system to handle are housing issues. Just because he can't evict someone or kick them out of a unlivable home. I'm specifically thinking of the Elsinore Edition. He sent several to the to go through the court system or the court process to get them out of those unlivable homes, and he said it's been a 4-year process and nothing has moved. So it may be worth looking at like a fine-based, just rewriting that section and pulling any legal.
I think let's start with, if you guys agree anyway, do we start by talking with him to see,
see what Trevor can offer to us
for the correct wording on that.
Yeah, and the best direction for a small town to take on that.
Yeah. I made a note to look into Sevier County's and chat with Trevor.
And keep it out of court, that's the best.
Yeah. And then the hard thing is if you have that language in and it gets to that point, then it's like, oh crap, what now? Or like, will Casey and the county court actually back us on this? And so if it's something you can handle in-house without having to rely on an outside entity, I think it would be cleaner.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Let's see. I think those are the big questions I had. Like I said, a lot of the changes were definitions, moving some definitions out of sections and putting them in the actual definition.
Defining what a fence is.
Yeah. Yeah, Devin added a lot of of definitions, which
there was something on the fence drawing, because we had that exhibit in there.
Yeah, I just saw that.
The corner lot.
I have a question on that, where the driveway is.
Yeah.
And it has those little...
site triangles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can still bring your fence up to either side of your driveway, right? As long as it's a 3 foot.
I think so. I think that's...
It doesn't have to bend up like that, right?
That's it doesn't just, have to angle.
See those dash lines on the driveway? Yeah, you don't have to angle your fence. It's just that's kind of the site triangles. That
you use. So you can't block those triangles from visibility.
So it either has to be a material you can see through or 3 foot, I think, in those site triangles.
Okay. All right.
And
that's not denoting the fence.
Okay. It just refers to them as non-obstructing area.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, and I can change that or make it clearer if you'd like. That's just that was the best visual that I was able to find that conveyed what your ordinance said.
No, I'm okay with it. I just wanted to make sure that wasn't telling people they had to put the fences like
trying,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's just saying you can't obstruct the view on the corner. You have to have those site triangles, which I think the ordinance. Yeah, no obstruction to view in excess of 3 feet in height shall be placed on any corner within the triangle area. But then, yeah, like chain link or similar may be allowed up to 48 inches in height on those side triangles.
Okay.
So, yeah, this would be good. I think those were all the questions that I had. I think we're getting close. So I don't know if we want to just give it one more month for everyone to just go through and just kind of make this the final draft, and or whatever you guys would like me to do.
So I'm thinking, as I'm looking through this whole section that covers the cul-de-sac and roadways and all of that has been removed. I don't see it in the land use anymore.
In the subdivision.
It's only in the subdivision, yeah.
Is that what they have on council? Was only in the subdivision?
I'm just saying, as I look at this...
Yeah, I don't...
It's not in here.
It's not... Was it ever?
I thought it was, but maybe that's my mistake.
I could put something in here under...
I don't think we need it in here. If it's... I'd rather have it just in one place than have the dual anyway.
If you want, like, please refer to Annabelle Town construction standards and drawings, I could put something like that where...
Yeah, some kind of reference like that, sure.
Okay.
Or cul-de-sac. Because there could be a cul-de-sac that ends up there with the CV and Dunn situation.
Mm-hmm.
But that wouldn't be a subdivision because everything's already there, unless Gordon Nielsen decides to subdivide his back section.
Do you want a cul-de-sac definition? Because I think we did pull that out. I think there was a definition, but there was no section related to the definition. So that was one of the.
I think if you put a definition, it should just refer to the subdivision ordinance.
Okay.
As a definition for cul-de-sac.
Does it?
For some reason, I thought it was in here too. It was in both places, but.
It probably doesn't need to be, actually, because, yeah, I mean, if you're doing a cul-de-sac, it would be...
It's cleaner to keep it in just one spot.
You would be subdividing land if you were putting in a cul-de-sac and meeting those standards. So, I think we'd be okay without it, but if you'd like something in there, I'm happy to...
No, I'm fine, personally.
Yeah, I think we're to the point, if you guys want to run through it one last time and highlight any other changes or modifications that you'd like me to make.
I think that we need to, we'll figure out timing of when we want to push this up to the town council. We just pushed one change up. That's the subdivision ordinance. This is the land use one. So they're completely separate changes.
Yeah.
And they tabled that one to review it and vote this month.
Okay.
We have questions for that later.
Okay.
if you want to wait until, I know elections are coming up, and I don't know if this is something that's something like, it's not really controversial, but if we want to wait until after elections and after the holidays, that's something we can definitely do as well. If we get it to a point where we feel as planning commission it's where we want it, then we could just hold off until.
Yeah, I don't think this necessarily affects anything election-wise.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And timing-wise, I mean, we can meet in November, but council and planning and zoning aren't going to meet in December.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So it pushes us to the first of the year regardless for timing.
So if we wanted to meet in November and just do a final review after everyone's had a few weeks to look through it, we could.
We could.
If not, we could wait until January. And then
more than likely, we'll wait until January.
Okay. That's totally fine.
Is the heat just turned on?
As soon as that, the furnace?
Okay, yeah.
Isn't that cold?
Apparently, I didn't think so.
And thank you again, Tyler, for all your work on this.
Yes.
You bet.
I think it gives you a little more time to maybe pull some stuff together, and you can even send it out via email what you find from as far as the penalties, you know, stuff like that that he suggests. Yeah. Feel free to push that out. Let us know.
I think John, you're going to our mayors and commissioners meeting.
Yeah.
Trevor's presenting on code enforcement, so that will be very applicable for this as well. That'll be November 3rd, so that's a week from today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I'll follow up with Trevor.
Chris is going also.
That's right.
Nice.
That was Tina's idea. She thought it would be good to have it too, but candidates attend.
Very good.
Very good.
Okay. Well, thank you again.
You're welcome.
Any other comments anybody wants to make on this land use before we move on?
Nope.
I know we've been doing it a long time.
Just other than we need to really take a good hard look at it the last time, all of us.
Yeah. Everybody, yeah, we need input from everybody.
Everyone has access to it, right?
Yeah.
To.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on, review current conditional use permits. Do we have any conditional use permits? Okay. So this one is Janet A. Nelson, which is Scott and Sona AC as well. It's all the same property. So signature-wise, did we get all the signatures we talked about? Did we get the people on the corner right across from them that don't live there, but they own the home?
Tina emailed us. I think she said they got all but that one.
All the neighbors are good with it.
Sounds great. Perfect. Great. Sounds good. Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to be opposed to it by any stretch, especially since the house and the trailer will go away at the end of it.
So what are they asking for here? I mean, I know we talked to them last time.
So what they're asking for, the current house that sits up on the southeast corner,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, the trailer's in front of it, actually, right? Okay. The single wide.
Okay.
So that house is not livable, and so they don't intend
it's
to
going
have
away.
It. It's going to go away.
And they have a renter right now.
They have
this.
A renter in this at the moment, and then down here on the other end of the property, Tina's right across the street right here, right? They want to bring in this manufactured home.
Which looks like it meets everything we need.
And so this will be the primary residence. this will go from being the primary to an accessory dwelling unit for a period of time while they get this all set up. They don't plan to move into this right away.
Right. Yeah.
And so the intent is that as soon as they do move into this, what they've told us is that these will go away.
That's what I remember, is the renter goes away.
The renter goes away and the buildings go away.
So okay, so they don't need an accessory dwelling unit after that.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're asking for one right now so they can build their home. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, so that this turns into an accessory dwelling unit so this can be built.
Okay, that's where I couldn't remember if they were coming back and asking something different, like it was going to be a permanent accessory dwelling unit. It's still going away.
It's still going away.
Okay.
So that should be what we're approving is for a conditional use for that with an expiration date on it. This is what we talked to them about.
Do they have a date?
I said 5 years. Mm-hmm.
That 5 years was the date that we had put on it verbally with them, but I don't see any kind of dates on this application.
We could put those in as conditions.
But we can put them in as conditions, yes.
And conditions of either put a time in there, and could we also say when you move in permanently to that home...
Within a certain number of days.
Within a certain number of days, your conditional use is no longer valid. Can we say that? It's
yeah.
Like, what if they decide in 3 years they're going to move in permanently to the manufactured home?
Yeah, because they've made it pretty clear that the intent is that as soon as they get moved in, that they want that going.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And so,
okay. So just give them after they get moved into the permanent.
With a maximum not to exceed the 5 year
total.
Like have both conditions on there. Like if they never moved in after 5 years, it goes away. Or if they move in before 5 years, then it goes away. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
Yeah, I think that's to me sounds like what we talked with them about. The way I recall it from last month.
And would we need to add a condition of more signatures? Or are we good there? I don't remember who was missing. Because we have done that in the past. Put that in the conditions that they get
the final signature.
Yeah, like
yeah, because this one is right across the street from the property. I mean, it's on the corner. It's not like it's somebody two lots.
The one we're missing.
The one we're missing.
Okay,
so put that in there too.
Do we do we know who the names of those people?
Tina does, and I'll ask her. We'll give them to them. See if they can't get in touch.
Is it the Mathis?
I think.
It's the house. It's the house, the older home right on the corner.
And Chris's uncle.
Okay.
Why didn't they give up now? All the others.
They tried to reach out and.
Okay. They tried a few
somewhere
times.
Else.
So.
Yeah, they live somewhere else.
So there's no issue. Like, no.
No.
Okay.
Just communication is more difficult.
Yeah, they're not there very often.
Motion.
Okay. Make a motion again.
Who are we approving it for?
Well, the ACs? The conditional use permit is under the Nelson, Janet Nelson. The notification has her name on it as well as Scott and Sonia AC together. But she is the owner of record.
Right now?
Yes.
Okay. And then we follow and say her name.
Yes.
Okay. I'll make a motion that we approve the conditional use for Janet A. Nielsen's property that also involves Scott and Sonia Acey. Approve that conditional use permit for a temporary accessory dwelling unit. And approve that with the conditions that this cannot go beyond 5 years. Actually, I'm going to say that different. This expires in 5 years if it is renewed every year. And it will expire as soon as Scott and Sonia AC have full-time residency
in their manufactured home that they're building, and it's conditional upon getting the final signature from the Mathis. So I mean, three conditions on there. Angel, you'll make that sound coherent? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So before we vote on that, is there a fourth thing that needs to be in there about how long the conditional use lasts after they move in? Do we have a date on that expiring?
I didn't say 30 days.
You didn't. You just said that as soon as they move in.
As soon as they move in, that'd be expired.
Okay.
So do we need to give them 30 days after they move in?
No.
I mean, it's not like we're going to be on counting the days, but...
Yeah. It's just that it expires when they move in full-time. Because that was their intent, was as soon as they moved in, the renter would...
That way I don't give them no, like, oh, yeah, come live here for a while.
I just wanted to clarify.
Okay. Well, I'd be okay adding it. Nope. Okay.
I'm good.
All right.
So you got the notes on
mm-hmm.
that. Okay. So...
And I'll listen to this several times again.
We have a motion to approve with the three items that were called out specific to the approval. Do you have a second?
I'll second.
Wade seconds. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion passes. Thank you. The next item is building permits. I don't believe we have any.
We do not.
And then other business? Does anybody have any other business to bring before the commission? If not, I would take a motion to adjourn.
I'll make the motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion. It's been motioned that we adjourn and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Unanimously. 6:15.